but Garlock said she doesn't think it was churros that burned her eyes. David Martin Davies, Texas Public Radio News. Oscar Casares is known for his short story collection, Brownsville, a publication that's become a new classic about life in that border city. Now, with his latest novel, Where We Come From, Casares again expertly depicts life in Brownsville. But it's a very different Brownsville, with characters who are new to the city, who have just arrived from Central America, and who come face to face with the people who live on the fringes of Brownsville. Here again, Casares, with precision and compassion, brings us to the realities of a space where the innocent fall prey to human traffickers and immigration officials alike. In the middle of the nightmarish scenarios are an unassuming middle-aged woman and her godson, who become the center of a tension-filled life-and-death situation and help us see the complex issues on the border. Texas Public Radio contributor Yvette Benavides spoke with Oscar Casares about his novel, Where We Come From.
Orly had a hard time imagining his great-grandfather's skin being anything like his, that he could be related by anything more than a last name. But he doesn't have time to turn this over in his head before Nina goes to the next set of photos. Each comes with its own story she has to tell before she lets him turn the page again. So many that they flood his mind with who was married to who, whose grandfather's land was stolen, which were the brothers who were hired guns, whose father was lynched by the Texas Rangers, who died in Korea, who died in a bar in Reynosa, who was shot in Vietnam and got a Purple Heart, who worked in a beauty parlor, who was a policeman and also played the harmonica and accordion in his own conjunto, who did time in prison, who left her boyfriend to marry the Jehovah, who raised six little ones on her own, who left to work in the fields and stayed up north, who was the first to finish high school, who was the homecoming queen that one year, who was the first girl in the family to finish college, who went away to school in Washington, in Boston, in California, who was the first to go to dentist school, who was the first to go to law school, who lived for years and years allá solita in New York City, who was the first to own her own business, who was the first to move away and not come back. Most of them dead and the rest living far from here. She turns one page and there's a sepia photo of Mama Ameche when she was 3 or 4, standing on a large wicker chair with a huge bow in her hair. As different as her hair and skin are today, the shape of her little eyes and nose looks the same. The next page has one of his dad when he was Orly's age and riding a horse. Toward the end of the album, they find his mom and dad's wedding photo. Nina waits a little longer because he's moving his finger along the edges of the picture.
I feel like this is my family. I feel like, oh yeah, the one who did this, the one who died in the bar, the one who went to Vietnam. It just feels so resonant. It just feels so real and so universal.
Each of those items, I don't think there's anything in there that hasn't in some way happened to my family. And the biggest challenge was not to leave anyone out, because I felt like they were going to come after me if I put everyone else in and I didn't mention in some way their own story. But I was interested greatly in the idea of the Latino and Mexican American middle class, which is a story that doesn't get told very often. I wanted to some way, give time to that idea of ascending, of not simply being in the barrio. That yes, there are still a lot of challenges and struggles going on, obviously, but that there is a segment of our population, of our group, that is making huge strides and then are faced with their own challenges, as we find with Orly and his dad. Orly being connected to this place, Brownsville, but it's still being very, very foreign to him. He's grown up in this very affluent area of Houston, and yet this is supposed to be the ancestral homeland, and yet he's having trouble really seeing himself in it.
That's such an interesting point because, as you say, this is a sort of a middle class, more affluent family, and Orly sort of comes face to face with, I don't know, a bit of a doppelganger in Daniel, who's from the other side and obviously steeped in poverty and violence and escaping those things. It's just such an interesting idea in this novel, this notion that, and it's not an original idea as I'm explaining it, of course, but it is made so new in this novel of we are all the same.
I'll say that I didn't start off with that as the intention. There was something sort of magnetic once I realized they were going to be inhabiting the same space, and that they you know, obviously would meet eventually. I didn't know this at first. I didn't know if this meeting was even going to occur. But once they did, where would their lives intersect, other than, the more obvious of being on this property? But where, how would they reflect off one another?
Is it fair to describe this book as a novel about immigration? I mean, it's about so many other things, but how do you feel about perceptions that this is a novel about immigration?
The time we're living in, I think that's going to sort of be unavoidable. The immigration that is in the headlines came second to this other form of immigration, that being the immigration that happens after assimilation. Once a family arrives in the country, they get acclimated and they start making some progress, and they start moving away from that nest. What happens? How do they stay connected? How do they make their way back? Do they make their way back? That's really where the story started for me. It happened that as I was developing the story, and I started writing this in 2014, long before things got as crazy as they are now on the border and with immigration. But it was always about that idea of Orly's father having been from there, and now his son coming back and being completely disoriented. So I suppose in a way it is about immigration. It's just not the more obvious form of it.
And as with your short story collection, Brownsville, and your first novel, Amigo Land, we're back on the Texas-Mexico border. We're back in Brownsville with where we come from. I think the readers of your work understand that the border has become a very different kind of landscape and setting since 2003, 2009, when those books were published. And so has Brownsville. I mean, I think even people who follow your work in Texas Monthly over the years understand the border maybe in new and different ways lately. But has Brownsville changed for you?
I have to work a little harder to find the Brownsville that I grew up in, that it isn't, it's still there. It's just tucked away. And I have to seek out those places and the people. It's a much larger community. There's a lot more noise in the way of, restaurants and businesses and just population wise. But I think that at its core, it's still basically the same town it was. It's just a much larger version of it.
And you logged a lot of hours in and around that area and on the border doing really a kind of field research to be able to address and write about some of the situations in this novel. What was that like?
I had to approach it with a lot of humility in the sense of not presuming to know this world. I mean, having, yes, I grew up in Brownsville, and yes, I go back quite frequently, and yes, I've known quite a few people who were undocumented. But I didn't want to, think that I knew what that was like just by association. And so I really started with a clean slate, and I just, I tried to educate myself in all the ways necessary. I spent some time with the Border Patrol. I visited a few different stash houses. I saw one demolished. I saw one that that looked in an area of town that it didn't surprise me that something like that might be going on. And then saw another one in a neighborhood that was hard to imagine that it had happened there. Very sort of middle of the road neighborhood. Nothing seemed askew. It seemed, very just average. I think the biggest piece of my research occurred when I met a former INS agent whose job for many years was to pose as an immigrant. He'd go into Juarez, pose as an immigrant, and get himself smuggled into the U.S. And taken all the way to Chicago, and then bring the operation down. And this was crucial because, as I understood it, the people that I spoke to, most of the immigrants who are going through this simply want to get through it. They want to get on the other side. They're doing everything to not be noticed, to not notice what's around them, and just keep their head down and hope that they get to their destination. In this man's case, his job, in order to build a case, meant he had to document everything that was going on around him. He had to be aware of how much the traffickers were making off each immigrant, how the money was, being used for supplies, and how long they were staying in certain locations, all the logistics, which, as you can imagine, near to impossible. It's not something you can, go online to find, find in a book necessarily. So you really, really have to go into the field, and this man had spent years doing this.
Oscar Casares is the author of Where We Come From, a novel. It's published by Knopf.